Dr. James Averill, State Veterinarian with the Michigan Department of Agriculture and Rural Development.
Dr. Averill, we've had a lot of what seems like a lot of bovine TB cases confirmed throughout Michigan in the last year or so. Can you give us more light on what the situation is and maybe why these are getting confirmed?
Well, there's a lot behind all that, and we have seen a number of herds here in the last 12 months. And a big part of what's driving that is our hypothesis is just the prevalence in the deer has gone up in our TB zone this past year. And we feel that is due to the fact that we had some harsh winters in the previous years, and that led to commingling or yarding up of the free-ranging white-tailed deer and causing more disease transmission amongst them. And then when they dispersed, once it became warmer, it led to a potential for cattle herds to become infected. So that's what we're thinking. We just have an uptick. It's a short, brief period of time, and that it will get back down to our more normal 1, 2, maybe 3 herds a year in our northeast Michigan. So that's what we think is going on, and it's just a blip right now, but I guess only time will tell. But that's our working hypothesis at this time.
Have some of those deers been reported through the hunting season or maybe the DNR?
So the Department of Natural Resources does hunter harvest surveillance every year during the hunting season, but they also do collect roadside or other folks who are harvesting deer through disease control permits. Looking for positives there. So the vast majority of the deer that are found to be positive are usually come in during the hunting season, though on occasion they will come in on a disease control permit. We typically just get those numbers, and we'll be getting the 2016 numbers here later this spring once all the testing is completed.
As far as the different Michigan TB zones throughout the state, how is that broken apart and what really sets those in different zones?
So 79 of the 83 counties in Michigan are actually TB-free. The 4 counties that are not TB-free are in the modified accredited zone, and so those are the counties of Alpena, Alcona, Mount Morenci, and Oscoda County in northeast lower peninsula of Michigan. And so the rest of the state is TB free. That doesn't mean we're still not doing some surveillance in some of those areas because we are doing some work in and around the adjacent counties of the 4 counties that are not TB free. And then the other thing that's always going on is there's always slaughter surveillance at USDA inspected facilities. And on occasion, which we have had in the last 12 months, we find something pop up through slaughter surveillance, too.
As far as some of those surveillance, the process, is the accredited zone have different rules and regulation for cattle moving in out of that region, or how does it affect them maybe a little bit differently?
So in the TB-free or accredited-free zone of the state, cattle movement is normal. There's no restrictions on that for the vast majority of the state. There is a little bit more that we look at from a restriction standpoint for the counties right adjacent to the modified accredited zone, but the vast majority of the state, business as usual. The one thing is all cattle leaving a Michigan premises needs to have official identification, which in Michigan is the electronic RFID ear tag.
When it comes to when a bovine TB case is confirmed, that could either be within a herd or during processing. What's the difference, and maybe what happens at that point?
So if we are out doing live animal testing, which is predominantly done in northeast lower Michigan, we're doing a skin test for that animal for bovine tuberculosis. And if an animal responds to that, then we do a secondary test, which is predominantly done by a blood sample. And then if that becomes positive, that leads to us removing that animal from the farm and having a full necropsy and looking for lesions suggestive of bovine tuberculosis. That will then get confirmed out at the USDA Veterinary Services Laboratory in Ames, Iowa. And then at that point in time, if that comes up positive, then we declare the herd to be positive, and further steps are taken with additional testing and or depopulation of that herd. If the animal is found through the slaughter surveillance, we trace that animal back to the farm it came from prior to going into slaughter, and then depending on that type of operation dictates what happens there, and ultimately we further trace the animal back to the farm of origin if it goes beyond that farm, and so in some instances that does happen. So if it's a breeding operation, we will go in and test the whole herd and see if we find further disease in there, and then depending on those results further dictate what goes on. And then if it's a, on the other side, if it's a feedlot, we do not go in and test, and we just keep the operation under quarantine and do controlled slaughter for that feedlot operation and continue to monitor if any TB-like lesions are found at slaughter and go from there. So those are the couple different ways we do surveillance for the disease and what happens when we find a positive in those different channels.
What will determine if a herd does need to be depopulated?
There's a number of things that play into whether a herd is depopulated or not. One is there available funding for indemnity through the federal government or the state government? Two is the prevalence of the disease, like how many animals are we finding positive in the herd? As that number goes up, that further ramps up the need to depopulate such a herd. So not all herds are depopulated. A number of herds these days are going through a rigorous test and removal program where we're in there every 60 days testing a number of animals, and the farm remains under quarantine, except we will allow animals to move into the slaughter channel. So sometimes that test and removal can create some hardships, and that also may help pushing more towards the depop side of things too. So every time we find an infected herd, there are discussions that take place on whether this herd should be depopulated or undergo a test and removal process.
As far as the threat of bovine TB, what really are some of the symptoms that causes in the animal and why it is important to make sure that this is monitored?
So there's a number of reasons why we have the program for of bovine tuberculosis in Michigan and why we're doing what we're doing. First and foremost, this is a zoonotic disease, so there is the potential for this disease to transmit from cattle or animals to humans, and that has happened on occasion here in Michigan, not very often. The other part is that the dairy industry heavily relies on the fact that we have the program in place, because if we didn't have the program we have in place today, with bovine tuberculosis being in Northeast Michigan predominantly, then if we didn't have that program and what we're doing, the dairy farmers of Michigan would not be able to sell their milk because of the way the pasteurized milk ordinance is written through the federal government. So we really need to be doing what we're doing and have the program in place so our dairy industry can continue to be functioning here in Michigan. And then on top of it, there's the food safety or aspect as it could be passed through milk, or the public health side of things, as it can be passed through milk, but that's why pasteurization came about in the 1930s. And also there's the inspection program at slaughter. So there's a number of things that are going on, all to make ensure that the consumer has a safe, wholesome product to eat or consume. And doing also, by doing what we do, we reduce the likelihood of cattle transmission, and we don't have the disease going unnoticed in operations and having the potential to affect other operations.
as far as some of the symptoms maybe in cattle, or even if that is passed in humans, what are you looking for, you know, if they're expressing symptoms?
So with the signs and symptoms of bovine tuberculosis in cattle, very rarely will you see the clinical signs, because this is a very slow-growing organism. And if it was to go unnoticed, as it's a respiratory disease, you would eventually see the animal be unthrifty, poor body condition, labored breathing. You might notice it coughing a little more and so forth. But in this day and age, we typically just don't see that. So our way we find this is through doing the testing, a skin test right under the tail of the cattle on a piece of skin called the caudal fold. So that's how we do the testing, and really we very rarely see any clinical signs suggestive of TB in cattle these days.
If cattle are outside of that TB zone, how regularly are they tested, or is it really through the slaughter surveillance where they're picked up?
So Michigan's bovine tuberculosis program takes very much a risk-based approach. So we're doing predominantly doing live animal testing in Northeast Michigan. And then for the rest of the state, we rely on the passive surveillance through slaughter surveillance. Now, when we find an infected herd, we look at where they've bought cattle and who they've sold cattle to for the previous 5 years. And we go into those herds and either do testing and or remove any exposed animals, so we can have a strong assurance that this is only the only herd we're dealing with, and that there's not another affected herd on the landscape.
If an animal is detected during slaughter that came from a dairy farm, is there a risk there with the milk?
No, with normal food safety practices that are taking place in the United States today, that risk is really minimized because of pasteurization of the milk. If the milk was not pasteurized, there would be some potential risk. So when we find a herd or dealing with an infected dairy herd, any animal that responds to the skin test when we do the testing, their milk is immediately pulled from the milk line until we get a negative test, and then at that point in time they would be allowed to return back into the milk supply. But out of an abundance of precaution, you take that out, because on occasion it can be spread through the milk, but we don't see that a lot these days, just because of the prevalence of the disease is so low, and the amount of testing we're doing, we catch it so early that the likelihood of that is minimized.
What does Michigan really need to be bovine TB free, and are we headed in that direction?
So the difficulty of dealing with bovine tuberculosis in Michigan is that we have a wildlife reservoir, and that is the free-ranging white-tailed deer. And so on average, we have 1 to 3 herds up in our TB zone where the disease is endemic and the free-ranging white-tailed deer popping up positive. And so to further really address this disease, we gotta prevent that interaction between deer and cattle. And so Michigan's cattle program is geared towards trying to make sure there are biosecurity practices in place to try to reduce that likelihood of the cattle and free-ranging white-tailed deer interacting. And then on the DNR side with deer, they've tried to make things be very liberal in the amount of licenses hunters can have and the amount of deer that they need to harvest. And so that we try to take both approaches. And we've tried various things over the years, and some things have worked, some things are not. But what we battle with and struggle with is that trying to find a spot where we can get both the hunting community and the agricultural community agreeing on what they're willing to live with and do, and that's a constant evolving process that we're constantly working on.
The governor's budget proposal for 2018, it does include a line item for a one-time monetary amount going toward bovine TB efforts. Do you know what some of those dollars would be put toward and what the benefit would be?
So the funding request that's in the governor's budget that's going through legislative process is a $1 million ask for one-time funding to deal with the wildlife interaction or the addressing the prevention side of bovine tuberculosis and trying to reduce the interaction between the free-ranging white-tailed deer and the cattle. So what we are calling it is enhanced wildlife risk mitigation. Cattle producers in Northeast Michigan are required to be wildlife risk mitigated in order to sell live animals. And so those were minimum standards created across the board for the entire northern lower peninsula when it was implemented in 2008. What we've seen over time is in the core area, right in the heart of the four counties where the disease has its highest prevalence in the white-tailed deer, is those minimum standards may not be enough. And so what we're trying to do is there's about 120 cattle herds in the heart of the four counties, and we're wanting to get out and reach out to them and have one-on-one conversations with them to evaluate their biosecurity practices with regards to the cattle and deer interactions. And if we identify some chinks in their armor, we want to use this money and this request to help cost share to implement some further infrastructure that they may need, whether it's high fencing to protect their hay, or it's high fencing for a feeding area, and or if it's some additional type of fencing, three-dimensional fencing needed out in the pasture to deter the deer from using that as a corridor to pass through. So those are some of the things that the funding would be utilized for to try to further move the needle with bovine tuberculosis and try to get more around preventing our cattle operations from becoming infected.
And any other work set for Michigan in the year ahead or maybe even longer term for bovine TB?
So bovine tuberculosis is the number one priority program in our amongst my staff. And so we're always, our goal is to return Michigan back to TB-free status. Our hope is that with doing this enhanced wildlife risk mitigation, we will reduce the number of herds coming infected so that we can take a step in getting them closer to and raise them in status one more level or one more rung on the ladder to modified accredited advance and start getting closer to them returning to TB-free. That's going to take probably some years before that's fully all the way back to TB-free, but you know, we're hopeful that these preventative practices will help us get them to the next status, and we'll have to be there for a little while before we can make the next step to TB-free. So that's where we're shooting for, and that's where we're at this point in time.